It's good to be here today. God's brought us together. I didn't get to talk to all of you, but the ones I've talked to, I found it very intriguing how we're here today for various reasons. And it's intriguing that I'm here today as well because I never saw this happening, that I would be involved with Roman and others trying to help folks in Central America, because you have to understand, part of my journey is going bankrupt, the equivalent of. I was a farmer one day, actually a hog farmer, and prices were good and prices were bad, and somehow the bad prices stayed longer than the good. And I decided that somebody with deeper pockets than mine had to take that work up, and I'll let them raise the ham. So I found myself in business in a different way. I told somebody here today that my father had a good father. He taught me how to work, but not as well on how to do business. And so I see that as I travel, and as Roman mentioned, we are involved with Java Taza and some other coffee packaging. I don't roast much coffee anymore, Roman, I used to, but we still roast quite a bit of coffee, so keep drinking it. We appreciate you keeping us in business, at least. So through my journey of thinking that you just work hard and that's how you put food on the table, that's half of the equation. The other half is knowing how to do business. And so that's what I find interesting and challenging as we work with folks in Central America in particular. I do travel to some of those countries, no Espanol, I don't speak Spanish, I get around, I write things down, I use my Google Translate, and I make out just fine. And I can ask for cafe, and I can ask it for negro, and it works. So, and they understand me, so. A little bit of my background. Grew up in a different type of church life than some of you have, and you know, we've always had this argument between fellowship and conference, and I grew up in conference type church life, and don't hate me for that, wasn't my choice. I've appreciated that type of church life to some degree. Grew up in what is known the Eastern Church. They taught me a lot, brought me to a place that I have to be thankful for. Since then, we are part of the Pilgrim Conference. So I do get down to Honduras as well quite a bit in working with the churches down there. We had a lot of good talks this morning, Brother Willard and Brother Thomas. I found it interesting. Most of what I have to share is a little bit different than what they shared. It seemed like we were going to kind of talk about the same thing, but maybe we're just weaving the rug, and we all have our different strands for the rug. I contacted actually six people from four different countries about this title, What Foundational Aspects Are Critical to Creating Successful Kingdom Communities, and I asked for their input on this question. And how many responses do you think I got?
Not many.
Not many. Actually, I went back to two of them and said, do you have anything to share? Because I have never lived long-term in any of those communities in Central America. We've stayed there a couple weeks, fill-ins, my wife and I, but not long-term. And so who am I to tell you all, and our brother from Guatemala here, how, you know, why am I here telling him how he should live in Guatemala? Should be the other way around. So I don't know if it's an indication of a hard question or if it's an indication that we just assume that everybody knows how to do this. And I did ask my wife the same question. And sometimes our wives are our best advocates and our best advisors. And you know what she told me? What foundational aspects are critical to creating successful kingdom communities? Just live like a Christian. Can't go wrong, can you? No, it's pretty straightforward. I like that answer, actually. It's pretty simple, direct. It's pretty clear for me. I don't have the brightest mind. I can understand that. But we want to unpack a little bit, what does it mean? I think we all agree, what does it mean to live like a Christian? That's what we're trying to discover. And what some of those things are, I would like some, we have a small group here. I would like to have some interaction on some things here, so help me out. There's a lot of things we understand about it. You know, we talked some about salvation this morning, repentance, and all of that that goes into successful communities. And if that isn't present, the community will find it very hard to be part of God's kingdom, because most of us would adhere to something similar to this that is in the Confession of Faith. It says, we recognize that the visible church as a body of believers organized for the mutual edification and the advancement of the cause of Christ. And then I ask myself this question, if that's what we believe about the body of believers, that it's for mutual edification, and it's for the advancement of the cause of Christ, are the same foundational aspects needed in Honduras, Costa Rica, Ireland, and United States? Are they the same foundational principles everywhere? Yes, no, maybe.
Absolutely.
So it doesn't matter if you're here or there, there's some principles that apply, and I agree. The steps and the things that are needed there, are needed here. And so then I'm like, I took a little comfort in that to realize that at 59 years old, I've experienced a bit of good Christian communities and kingdom communities. And I'd like to share with you, and you may disagree with me, and you're free to do that. I have 4 points in general, and then I would like to look the second half somewhat at the individual, because I do believe that our churches and our communities will not be any better than we are as a person. Just can't be that way, because we can talk about this thing of kingdom communities and somehow almost takes the people out of it, but it's the people that make up the community. But the first 4 points, I believe in order to have a good community, we need to establish community. And what do I mean by that? Well, if you were grown up in the church I grew up in, there was a lot of talk about those that came out of conference and established Mennonite Messianic Mission, the 3M back then, and one brother here, his family was influenced by that, and my parents were influenced by that. But there was talk in our churches, and there was history shared. And what I'm telling you this is because I believe that the bridge to a strong future is resting on the past. And we have to understand that we are not somehow an isolated era or people group right now. We're only part of. We're part of. And we have to understand that we're part of the history not the only thing of the history. And so we need to establish community. How do we establish community? That's a question I have for you. Tomorrow, we're not gonna be here. We have fellowship meal at church. What does that mean? It means community. How else do you build community? What practical ways do you build and establish community?
Help each other when there's a need.
Help each other when there's a need.
Drink coffee together.
Drink coffee together. It's a social thing. What else?
Pray together,
sing together. You take meals to the young couple that has a small baby. We go visit somebody in the hospital. It's on and on and on and on. It's a thousand things that we do that builds community. And I'm telling you that for somebody like myself that has been in community, we have taken it so much for granted. But there's so many things that builds community. And it's one of the things that I see that could be strengthened in some of our Central American communities. They're busy running and doing, but they need to build community. They need to establish community. Somebody has said this, that you need at least two of these, if not all three of these things, to have a successful church community, and that is shared vision. When we sit a fellowship meal tomorrow, you know what's going to happen? We're going to talk. And the only way I know what Ken's thinking is when he's talking, okay? And so when we talk, we understand, what's your vision? What do you believe about things? And it's amazing. My wife and I are 38 years. 38 years of married life here next week on the 24th. And it's still amazing sometimes when we talk, we're like, oh, I didn't realize you thought that way about that. I didn't understand when you used that word, what did you mean by that word? I assume she meant what I understood what the word meant. She has a different understanding. So we have this shared vision, shared understanding of each other. There's part of this thing that I want to be careful, but we need to have shared history. Communities in Central America have been there now for what? They went what, in the 70s?
The late 60s,
70s. So that gives us how many years? 54 years of shared history. 50 years of shared history. And yet I grieve when I look of how fragmented some of these communities are and that they haven't been able to pull together on that shared history with each other. And the third thing this individual told me, you need to have a shared location. And that just means geographically within some type of a geographic area that you can relate, visit together, say hi to each other at the hardware store. Part of that, I believe, is important, and that is establishing community. Moving on, number two, leadership. I believe that things rise and fall with leadership. You know, in business, as a leader, you set the tone, you set the culture. How you show up in the morning is probably how your workers are going to show up. Disclaimer, I am not ordained, so I can talk. Those that are ordained are called by God in a place of leadership, and that's a whole subject of its own. We don't have time to go into all of that. But nevertheless, leaders need to
lead.
We have gotten there's been this reaction against leadership. Not all good. Not necessarily badly. I'm not talking about bad leadership. I said we didn't have time to get into that. But leaders need to lead, and we need to give them space to lead. When you realize, and I don't know when this occurred to me, probably in my mid-30s, you see, my dad was always kind of the leader. Even he took the brunt of it. As you had children growing up and you realize they're calling you dad and you have to be the leader, and then all of a sudden you realize you're not near as critical of your parents anymore because you realize your own mistakes and your own weaknesses. And so leaders need to lead. We need to give leaders space to lead. 1 Thessalonians 5:13 says, and to esteem them very highly in love for their work's sake. We can have a brothers meeting and we map out and their leadership and we have a good evening together and we're all happy and we're just like in love in the Lord and it's just like this is good church life. And then all of a sudden, what we plan to do doesn't work out quite the way we think. And sometimes the map we lay out is not the territory, okay? You can look, of course, this generation, most of us still remember the old Rand McNally things. And somehow you open that map up, it never looked like where you were. It's like, this doesn't look like the intersection I'm at. Well, that's what happens so many times in our communities. The reality is different than the map we thought we had. And we may start a community in Central America, and this is the model, and this is what we're going to do, and all of a sudden, the reality doesn't match the map. And then we blame the leaders, and the leaders blame the laity, and we have this cycle going. Of course, you know that in the book of Acts, there's ones that led out. I would say this, and I'm going to be on both sides of the coin here today somewhat. Some of the things that I see strengths that Asal has, some of the things that I think we need to be mindful of, and that is this, that when at the beginning of the church, and people sold properties and possessions, they came and laid the money at where? At the apostles' feet. And the church directed how those things went. And it is Asal's intention and wish that we are not coming in and trying to build something separate than the local church community. And are we perfect at that? No. Continue to seek to understand each other, but meeting, as I understand, meeting with the local church leaders so that what is done is complementing the work and not somehow distracting or taking away from it. But the resources were laid at the apostles' feet, and it's important that leaders lead. It's important that leaders lead in the routines of church life. I know in one community in Central America, there they did not have communion for a while, or they didn't have revivals. They couldn't get anybody, so they just kind of skipped it, and it wasn't done. Okay, it just didn't work out this year, and so next year we'll try, and we don't get it done. It was interesting to me, particularly on the subject of communion, if you have a church that no longer has to give accountability to each other, you don't have a community. A community is accountability. And so leaders need to keep the routine of church life. Number three, and this is a difficult one, but I remember, I don't know who all was there, but several years ago, when this whole idea of what a sow would try to do in Central America was being birthed, there was a meeting held in Lancaster County at the Ephrata Diner. Were you there, Roman?
But it was a little bit, it was a little further north, but it was at a small diner.
Okay, a little further north, okay. Didn't quite remember. But there was several church groups came together. I mean, there was people came together from across the Anabaptist communities. And one of the things I remember very distinctly then, because I remember people that I knew that were children that grew up in these communities that came back to the States to work during a certain time, so they had some money, and then they went back again. And that was one of the things either you or Leland drew on the board and wrote down how this cycle worked. And I believe in order to have communities, that we need to have multiple generational communities in two ways. One is, I think it's very healthy that we have church life where we have some gray heads and some youthful energy, the whole spectrum. I also believe in these communities and in our communities that the children need to be able to come along and pick up the work and be able to do dignified work. And so it's our desire to keep our boys on the mission field. I put that in parentheses because anywhere we are is a mission field. But we want to be able to have the next generation pick up the work that the previous generation started and continue that on, and that churches can flourish and new churches start and it builds on just like it does here over time. Okay, I'm not suggesting, you don't think I've told you that we should keep all of our children close by and somehow we have built farm by farm upon farm. I'm not suggesting that. But I am suggesting that in order for our communities to be successful kingdom communities, you need to have multiple generations there. Because what value is it if it only lasts for one generation? And so we need to work at that. And it's a sow's goal to provide that opportunity. Number four, and this was a new one to me, and listen closely, and I'll try to explain it the best I can, and maybe you know this, but we need to stay away from end of history illusions. End of history illusions. And it is this idea, it's a new thought, a new thing that I just learned more recently, and that is that we as humans tend to have an end of history illusion, meaning that, and it's usually in a negative way, and that is that we believe that the best is already past, and the future and the present will never be as good as the past. I'll use a personal example. Told you I'm part of Pilgrim. And I bless the brethren that put the time and effort into the children's home, Good Shepherd's Children's Home that is in Saguatepeque, Honduras. That building no longer has any children in it. It lasted less than one generation. How many of you used to get the newsletter, Good Shepherd's newsletter? And some of you? We used to have pretty pictures in there of children and roses, and it was just like the best. Of course, some of you are familiar with Romania, and, you know, you can almost believe that the past was as good as it's going to get, and the future is like, well, you know, we're just not much there anymore. Let's not fall into that trap, because God is willing to work with individuals that are consecrated to him for his purpose. I told one of the brethren that had put a lot of time and effort into the Good Shepherd's home, I said, Brother Carl, I said, it may never be a children's home again. And I grieve that for you and with you on that, because that was your dream and your vision. But I said, let us never underestimate what God can still do with that resource. What that is, I don't know. Omar, you told me that this facility, the men came together seeking direction, and God had blessed them with material things that they wanted to be able to give and as an asset to the Anabaptist community. What it was going to look like, they didn't know. And they tried various things. But
a lot of research and looking around,
yeah,
before they decided on this.
Mm-hmm. And here we are, and it's been a long-term blessing. And so, let's not fall prey to believe that somehow that the other thing that comes to be sometimes is that we believe that we have a little difficulty, let's say, in church life in one of those communities, and it's like, okay, you know, it's such a mess, and it's like this will never be as good as it was. And if we believe that, then that's what it's going to be. And I used to tell parents with that their children were growing up into teenage years, they're like, oh, they're just really afraid of these teenage years because their children just, because you know teenagers, you know, they're just like, and I'm like, stop saying that. Stop painting that picture. If you believe your teenagers are going to be that way, they probably will be. And that's the same here. Let's not view difficulty as the end of the history that God's going to write. There's still history left. Here's a quote I came across. No man ever steps into the same river twice, for it's not the same river, and he is not the same man. There's a lot of other things we could talk about, but those are some of the things on the broad sense, on group level, that I think is important as we build communities here or there. Let's switch, if we can, to the individual, and the whole can't be more than the individual. And we can't lead people to a place we've not been ourselves. Whether here or there, to have successful communities, we need to have devotional life. The thing I hear from some of our missions in those churches in Central America, and that is this, that they have so much pressure, they have so many things to do, there's so much pressure on them, and it seems they and us have a problem that we can't stop hurrying, and we need to stop and breathe and relax. Deuteronomy 17:19-20 said, he shall read therein all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God, to keep all the words of this law and these statutes, to do them, that his heart be not lifted above his brethren. Isn't it interesting that God said that we're supposed to read the book of the law so that we might learn to fear God? Not only that, but I found it very interesting that our hearts aren't lifted up above our brethren, okay? So devotional life is critical. Number two, we need to have love and compassion. You've heard it said this way before, that people are opportunities, not interruptions. Thomas talked about it. Willard maybe talked about it as well, where business is mission. I'll tell you a little thing I do, and you have your things, and you let me know. I keep a little stack of books from time to time on my desk. The last one I had, and I didn't quite meet my goal. I have one left on my desk. I wanted to give them all out before Election Day. And that is Gary Miller's little condensed versions, Things Jesus Wouldn't Do. And it just talks about Jesus' involvement in the political process. I find if you just have a book, just whatever, just something there, and you can talk, and sometimes conversations happen fast, and it's just like, oh, you know what? If you want to know what I believe about this, here, take this and read. You might not agree with it. Let's talk about it next time you come. And I've given it to a lot of people that we didn't have the time to have the conversation, but have those things in order to give, because people are not interruptions, they're opportunities. So have love and compassion for people. I think this is one of the things that is needed as we relate to Central American communities, church communities. We need to be sensitive to the differences in culture and make conscious effort not to offend unnecessarily. Does that sound about right? We need to be sensitive to the differences in cultures and make conscious effort not to offend unnecessarily. I quote that from a brother that lives in Central America. We need to be sensitive to the differences in cultures and make conscious effort not to offend unnecessarily. How that all looks, I'll let that to wiser minds than mine. That's a big subject, although I think it's important. That is under love and compassion. By this shall all men know that you are my disciples, if you have love one for another. The third thing, and that is contentment and stewardship. You know, the Joneses aren't really that happy. And money kind of, sort of, maybe makes us happy. But when disagreements over material possessions begin to cause strife and envy or bitterness, we have a problem. We're on a course away from God and the community of God. When one straps himself with high debt in order to achieve a better lifestyle, that's a difficult one. I don't have the answers to all that, whether that's here, whether it's there, but I know debt has takes an emotional toll on us. Contentment and stewardship. And I don't know how to overcome this, but we need to be able to give willingly. And our communities, our church communities in Central America need to be able to give as well. And if it's just a few limps or whatever currency you're dealing with, they just have to be able to give. And that needs to be done. And some to the expectation that they can give and their giving makes a difference. You know, we showed up here a couple years ago. Pilgrim has done this work ministry where we go to Honduras with, say, 20 youth, and we do some work projects. And again, It's a whole subject of its own, helping chronic needs, helping critical needs. And that's, I'm not saying we found our way 100% on that. But what really struck me is we showed up one day to help do some concreting at a lady's place. And there were some other men there, some native men. And when we came and the youth unloaded off the pickups and we went there to work, those men disappeared behind the shed because the Americans had shown up, as if their contribution didn't mean anything. It's a sad thing. And I don't know if there's anything we could have done initially from keeping that from happening. But, okay, you take a group of American youth and you have a pile of some sand and some rocks and then some concrete bags that we brought along, and you tell them to mix concrete, do you think they knew how? They didn't have a clue. And I told the youth, I said, you know what? These tools in America make us look wise and strong, but we're actually fairly dumb when it comes to practical things. And so I said, let's stop. I said, this is where we need to stop. You call those men back. You teach our boys how to mix up concrete. Those that you've seen it done, you know. And they just go to it, and it's just like clockwork, you know, shovel here, shovel there, a little water, and it's like going. It's just like they know how to do it. And so we need to encourage that they need to be part of it. That their giving matters. Sometimes we create this mentality that they don't matter and we do, and we're the Americans and we know how to do it. And let's not go down that path. We need to be thankful. I did not live back in 1949, 48. Anybody here? 49? No. That was at the end of World War II. And I read this story here a while ago that the Americans sent over railroad cars to France full of things for them after the war. 700 train cars full of things, and it was called the Friendship Train. You know what happened a year later? France sent things back and filled up 49 railroad cars, because at that point there was 49 states. A car for every state, and each car, railroad car, was taken to each state, and that was called the Mercy Train. And they had big celebrations. The best I can understand, the celebration wasn't so much that there was that much value in the train car, but the celebration was that U.S. had sent things over to help France recover from the war, and France, out of its generosity and love, wanted to give back. They sent 49 cars over, and there was thousands of people that gathered to see these cars and unload the cars. To me, it tells me what humans appreciate, and that is this love and compassion for each other. And all I can tell us is, let's go first. Too often we wait and we say, well, if they do, then I will. Let's just do it. And it works. The power of gratitude. Let's leave that point of love and compassion. Let's move on to, that was contentment and stewardship. Let's move on. Humility. We talked about humility this morning some. Let's not have the illusion of control or overconfidence and a host of other things that lead us in wrong directions. I've been there. My wife and I moved to Missouri and thought we could farm, and we show the Midwesterners how Lancaster County people farm and know how to do it, and you know the end of the story. I've told you that already. But it was a path and a journey that I think God had to take me on, where I wouldn't be the same person I am today without that experience. Remember the story of Naaman. His servant said, "Naaman, if the prophet would have asked you to do something great, you would have done it. But you can't do the simple thing." And simplicity and humility saves. What did my wife say to have successful communities is do what?
Live like
a Christian. It's pretty simple. If we're just willing to do that, as humans, we complicate things. 1 Peter 5:5, God resisteth the proud and giveth grace to the humble. Humility, humility, humility. Emotional maturity is another thing I think about, and that is we as humans use things to fill voids in our life that are never meant to be filled by the things we seek after. And it can be a lot of things. We can seek after material things to fill voids. We can seek out relationships. We can want children to somehow fill some void in our life. And there's a host of things. But we need to be emotionally mature and maturing. And one of the things I think we need to be careful, and this was shared by a brother in Central America, he says, and I quote, he said, "The church fasts and prays and the Holy Spirit directs who should go to these communities, but we need to be careful not to send people who have a void in their lives, who are looking for something to do or fulfill their longings for recognition, etc." And filling a void in our lives with something, whether it's material things, let's take care of that in Jesus Christ, and then we're able to enter into these other things. The other thing I think we have to understand, and that is I find that we have become pretty sensitive to uncomfortable things. We have conflated discomfort to danger. You know your church community. There's things that happen, and there's things that happen in Central American church communities. And discomfort, when some of us disagree with each other and it feels uncomfortable, that's not danger, okay? That's actually good for us. It helps us grow. This I share from the same brother. He said, "There will be conflicts over personalities and opinions. We need to give each other the space to exercise our gifts in love and forbearance, and at the same time seek the unity of the Spirit and in the direction of His Word." Let's be uncomfortable. Let's be willing to talk, discuss. Let's be willing to put ourselves up on the table and say, I'm sorry, I didn't realize that that's how you perceived me to be. Emotional maturity, it takes maturity to do that. Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory. Finishing up here, purity is important. There is a lot of havoc wrecked when individuals seek other things in purity in their lives, purity in heart, purity in mind, purity in actions. Matthew 5:8 talks about being pure in heart. Again, all these things tie together. It takes a lot of humility for me to go to somebody and say, I'm struggling. I need your help. But we need to be willing to do that. And that's the last thing I have, and that is we need to be honest. Ephesians 4, 13 through 15 tells us, speaking the truth in love. And I say this many times, we can speak the truth, but it's not in love. Or else we speak in love and we don't speak the truth. The Bible says, speak the truth and don't get hot under the collar. That's my rendition of it. Speaking the truth in love. And both are important. We need to speak the truth. We need to be willing to be honest. But we need to do it in love. Some time ago here, I heard of a case where, and this was in the States here, a church was taking a vote on something, and they were doing ballots, and they said that they should sign their name on the ballot. And they got a ballot in that just, the individual just, he couldn't read his name. You mean you're that immature that you aren't willing to sign your name that's legible so the ministry know how you voted? Really? Is that what we're coming down to? Such childishness? Let's speak the truth and honest and be honest and speak it in love and have emotional maturity. I have this on my desk right now is a motto by one of the former presidents. And I have taken this approach, and I talked to Brother Nat Yoder in Costa Rica, and I asked him sometimes, particularly with the children's home in Honduras, I said, you know, did we do the right thing? He said, you can learn lessons after it's done. But he said, God can use our sincere efforts even though it might not have been the best. And so I am very careful not to criticize. And this is how it goes. It's not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of the deeds could have done better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred with dust and sweat and blood, who strives violently, who errs and comes up short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming. But who does actually strive to do the deeds? Who knows the great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends themselves in a worthy cause? Who at best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement? And who at the worst, if he fails, at least he fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who know neither victory nor defeat. May God bless us as we endeavor to do his work and not be critical of those that indeed try. Thank you for your attention.